My name is Abhilash Jindal and I will be presenting Unsafe Time Handling in Smartphones. This work was done with my advisors and colleagues at Purdue University. Modern day smartphones are incredibly battery constrained. On one hand, we have increasing hardware software functionality, and on the other hand, smartphones are limited in form factor and weight. This makes battery a very crucial resource on smartphones. And to save this crucial resource, smartphone OSs have gone into a huge paradigm shift in power management. When on traditional desktop server environments, the CPU is by default on. The CPU is turned off when it has been idle for a long time. But on smartphones, OS will now aggressively turn off the CPU just after a brief user inactivity. Now, this has been very helpful in increasing the standby time period, but it has some consequences. Let's look at this program. This program is measuring memory bandwidth. What it is doing is it gets a timestamp, does the memory operation, gets another timestamp, and calculates the difference, in this case, 3 seconds, and returns the memory bandwidth. Now let's look at another execution of the same program. It gets the current system time, does the memory operation. Now let's say before getting the second timestamp, the CPU goes to sleep. Now the second timestamp will be obtained when the CPU next wakes up, which can be, let's say, 5 minutes later. So the T2 is now 5 minutes, making the difference 300 seconds and making this code incorrectly computing the bandwidth value. So sleep-induced time bugs happen when the smartphone CPU or SoC is suspended in the middle of a time manipulation. This alters the intended program behavior, and they are incredibly hard to reproduce because the CPU will have to sleep between that small time manipulation during the code execution. And when we reported certain patches about sleep-induced time bugs to Android kernel developers, they also echoed this sentiment with debugging. Okay, to avoid such bugs, Android OS, for example, already exports some power control APIs called wake locks. So now a function foo is trying to do a time manipulation. So the function foo will surround this time manipulation with a wake lock call. What this wake lock ensures is that CPU is suspended. What this wake lock ensures is that CPU cannot be suspended while the wake lock is held. And the CPU is only suspended after the last wake lock in the system is released. Now, although such mechanisms are available, but programmers are not accustomed to thinking that CPU will suddenly suspend in the middle of a code execution. So they don't use this APIs properly, leading to bugs. So for the rest of this talk, I'll first categorize how time is being used in the Android ecosystem. We'll categorize it into 4 different categories. Driven by these categories, we'll build a static checker clock, which finds sleep-induced time bugs on Android kernel, and we'll evaluate it by running it on Android kernel. Okay, to understand how time is being used in Android, we started with collecting a list of time-related APIs exposed at each software level, and we grabbed them. We found that indeed time is used extensively across all the software layers in Android. And usages of time belong to 4 categories: timed callback, time setting, time arithmetic, and logging. And all the 4 categories are vulnerable to sleep-induced time bugs, as we'll see now. The first category is timed callback. Here, the code is trying to perform a certain task at a future time. So what it does is it registers an alarm with the system, specifying a callback function and a timeout parameter. So this is a snippet from MSM serial driver code. It is using a HR timer start timer registration API and passing a function pointer and a timeout parameter. Now, if the CPU suspends before the timer callback finishes, it will alter the intended program semantics. The next category is time setting. Here, the code is just updating the current system time. This is a code snippet from Android framework. The code first obtains a time from network. It does some very short computation on it and sets the current system time. But imagine if the CPU goes to sleep before you set the current system time. This code will end up setting a stale time on the system. The next category of time usage is time arithmetic. Here, the code is collecting two timestamps and performing some arithmetic operations on them. We already saw an example of memory copy benchmark with this. And we also saw that if the CPU sleeps between obtaining the two timestamps, then it will end up in an incorrect computation. But there is another very interesting vulnerability here. This memory copy benchmark can actually return negative bandwidth. Let's see how. So the code obtains the first timestamp. It does the memory operation. But now let's say before getting the second timestamp, the user comes in and sets the time to a previous value. Now the T2 obtained will be a value prior to T1, making the difference negative and hence the measured bandwidth negative. So another vulnerability in time arithmetic is if the time is set between obtaining two timestamps, then it will lead to incorrect computation. The fourth category is time logging. Here, the code obtains the current system time and logs it in conjunction with some event. This is usually done for some post-mortem debugging. Now, again, if the CPU suspends between the event and its timestamping, then it will result in an incorrect timestamp being logged for the event, making the debugging extremely challenging. Okay, now that we understand the different ways time is used in Android, we are ready to talk about Clock, which is a static checker built for finding bugs in the Android kernel. But before I present Clock, I'll first give an introduction to a few compiler analyses that Clock uses. The first analysis is reaching definition data flow problem. The question that this analysis is trying to answer is that what are all the definitions that can reach all the statements in the program? So let's say we have this dummy code on the left. We first convert it into a control flow graph. The analysis starts with some empty sets, but without going into details, when the analysis finishes, it annotates all the program points with the definitions that can reach that program point. Another related concept that Clock uses is usedef chains. Usedef chains link each use of variable x to definition which reach that use. So let's say we have this simple program which is computing the sum and product from 1 to n. Now, if we ask about this use, this statement is printing and using the variable product. The usedef chain will help us answer, saying that these are the two definitions that can reach this use of the variable product. And if you apply this recursively, usedef chains will tell you all the definitions that impacted the one variable use. So for example, product into equal to I is using the variable I. Now again, we recursively use usedef chains to find the definitions of I and so on. So notice here that the sum equal to zero statement did not impact the use of the value product and hence does not appear in this closure. The counterpart of USDEF chains, which is also used in clock, is defuse chains. Defuse chains link each definition of variable X to those U's which that definition can reach. So going back to our original program, sum is a definition. The defuse chains will tell us all the uses where this sum can propagate to. And again, if we apply this recursively, it will tell us all the uses directly or indirectly impacted by this one definition. Okay. Now we are ready to talk about clock. So clock is a static checker. It takes program source code as the input. It runs some standard compiler transformations on it. Then it does two things. It identifies the protected statements, and it identifies time-critical sections. And if there are any time-critical statements that are not protected, they are reported as bugs. Now notice here, clock only handles case 1, 2, 3 of time-critical of time usages. Because for logging, there is no syntactic clue correlating the event and the timestamp used for that event. Let's first talk about identifying protected statements. Let's say this is a simple program with a bunch of wake lock acquires and releases. The first thing we do is convert this program into a control flow graph. Then we change all the wake lock acquires to an assignment to 1 and all the wake lock releases to an assignment to 0. Now, if you simply apply reaching definition analysis, it will annotate all these statements with the wake lock definitions that can reach there. So clearly, if the only definition that reaches a statement is wake lock equal to 1, then that statement is protected. Okay, now let's talk about identifying time critical sections. So this is done on a case-by-case basis according to the time usage patterns. The first case, if you recall, was timer callback. So for finding time-critical section in timer callback, clock starts with finding the timer registration site in a code, which are clearly defined APIs. And then it applies points to analysis to find callback target function. So for example, our MSM serial code, the HR timer start is a timer registration API. Clock will use points to analysis to identify that MSM serial clock off is the callback function target. Next, clock would just conservatively add the entire callback function to time critical statements. The next case is setting the time. Now, set time APIs are also well defined for a system. So clock would start with the statements where the time is set. It will recursively find defs using UD chains. So let's see an example from the Android framework. The set and broadcast network set time is the actual API setting the time. The variable C is being used to set the time. Now, if we use UD chains, we can find out the definition of C, which is reaching this point. And we do this recursively. So we find that C equal to F nits is using another variable nits, which is being defined here. So by recursively finding these defs, we now know all the definitions that impacted the time variable C. So we can just simply add all the paths from the definitions to set time into time critical statements. The final category that clock handles is time arithmetic. So again, all the get time APIs are well defined for every system. So clock would start with the definitions that get time, and we find the closure of uses using DU chains. So going back to our memory copy benchmark, clock would identify that T1 is a variable which is getting time. It applies DU chains to find the use of T1. Now, and we do this recursively again. So this statement is defining another variable tdiff, which is being used later. Similarly, t2 is another time variable, which is used here. Now, once we built the closure for all the time variables, the next thing clock does is if a statement has variables from two different closures, t1 and t2, then it must be doing arithmetic between those variables. So for example, this statement has a variable t2 coming from the closure of t2 and t1 coming from closure of t1. So we know this statement is doing arithmetic between t2 and t1, and we can simply add all these statements between getting t1 and getting t2 to time critical statements. We implemented clock on top of LLVM compiler infrastructure. We added 5 custom passes, one to build the call graph, and then 4 other custom passes for identifying protected statements and case 1, 2, 3 time critical statements. In total, we added 5,000 lines of code, which are available at GitHub. Okay, now let's evaluate it. To perform evaluation, we ran clock on 5 different Android variants corresponding to 5 different phone types: Nexus 1, Nexus 7, Nexus 10, Nexus S, which are all ARM-based, and then an x86 phone. In total, clock found 63 bugs. The vast majority of the bugs were time arithmetic bugs. There were only 4 time callback bugs and 0 time setting bugs. 14 out of these 63 bugs were already fixed in the newer kernel versions. 7 files have been removed. This leaves us with 42 bugs. We reported patches of them, and 7 developers replied so far, confirming 7 bugs. This shows just an example of a bug that clock found. Here, the driver is trying to measure an incoming pulse width. So whenever the falling edge of a pulse comes in, this interrupt handler is called. This interrupt handler would calculate the time difference between the falling edge and the rising edge. This time difference is passed on to a function. The function does some manipulation on it and eventually sets a receive buffer using this value. So if a sleep-induced time bug occurs here, the delta we calculated on top will be incorrect, making the driver measure incorrect pulse width. So out of the 63 bugs we found, 18 bugs were correctness related, where 6 drivers incorrectly measured pulse width, like earlier. 5 radio drivers incorrectly measured clock rate, which is necessary to decode incoming data, and 7 other bugs. Then there were 15 performance-related bugs, where 8 drivers spin for an extended period of time, leaving their device unusable. 4 code locations would call sleep for a long time, and 3 drivers keep their devices on longer than necessary, wasting battery. The rest 30 bugs were benchmark-related. In total, clock reported 106 false positives. The main reason was that in some cases, suspension does not affect program semantics. For example, a driver is just generating a random number by subtracting 2 timestamps. Another reason for false positive, especially in setting system time, was system calls. So system calls are just wrappers of the actual time setting API. And since clock does not use the user space program that will call this system call, it does not consider the added protection that user space program will add. To conclude, we found there are sleep-induced time bugs in Android. Because time manipulation forms a time-critical section, and whenever CPU suspends during a time-critical section, it leads to bugs. We found that time is widely manipulated in the Android ecosystem, and the manipulation falls into 4 categories: timed callback, time setting, time arithmetic, and logging. And all the 4 categories are vulnerable to sleep-induced time bugs. We built a static checker clock and applied it to the Android kernel and we found 63 bugs. Clock is available at GitHub. Thank you.
Any questions?
So very nice work. So instead of finding all the bugs, why not fixing the clock? Because in the server environment, in a virtualized OS, currently Linux maintains two clocks. One is the absolute clock, which synchronizes always with the host. It's called a run-queue clock. Another clock is only ticks when the virtual machine or the OS is running. It's called a run-queue clock task. So in this way, if you can have a separate clock, it's called like sleep clock. Then we'll remove all the time that this device was sleeping. Then all the time measurement should be accurate in a guest operating system.
Yeah, that is a very good point. So actually, Linux, so the POSIX system provides six different clocks. And one of those clocks is, like you mentioned, clock monotonic. That does not include the system suspension time. But the different, let me just show you here. So this just shows four of them. The other two are process-only clock and thread-only clock. So there are these clocks available, but due to their subtle semantics, developers still end up using the wrong clock, making such errors.
So basically, in most of these bugs, if the developers used the monotonic
so
clock,
the actual
that would
patch,
fix the...
Yeah, the patch is generally to change the clock they are using.
Okay. Any other questions? So let's thank the speaker again.